Welcome to Rockin' the Music World. I'm Robert Lloyd.
Get on the left, get on the right. Turn on the radio and join in the fight. Sort out the lies, seek out the truth. On the radio, they're giving the proof. You're gonna love it, hate it, it can confuse. First time you try it, it can give you the blues. But take my word, you can call and abuse. Just keep on talking news.
Yeah. Wow. Welcome, everybody. Hope you had a fantastic week. You're having a fantastic week and a fantastic day. I'm having a great day here. And, of course, as people know, listeners know, I live in South Florida. And today, right outside my office window here, I got the windows up. It's beautiful, maybe 70 degrees right now, no wind. It's got a light rain outside, and it's just, I thought I'd keep my window open. I was going to close it so I didn't have that on the recording. I thought, nah, that's pretty cool. You know, we can all enjoy a little nice weather down here, nice and cozy. And anyway, I'm Robert Lloyd, and this is Rockin' the Music World, as you all know. And today, my show's called, you'll love this, Surprise, Surprise, Musicians You Didn't Know Were Jews. Wow, and it is amazing. Now, I've been in the music business all my life as a total failure, of course. I mean, you know, I'm not living in a mansion, and then I don't have, like, what Sting has, like, what, 9 mansions around the world, and all these other politically correct musicians that, it's just surprising. I mean, even I am surprised on a weekly basis anyway. You know, my wife is really good at this, that, you know, she's kind of, you know, she's a late bloomer in this whole thing. When she married me, it was an eye opener for her. She had no idea what was going on in this world. She's a good Christian woman. She had no idea that was going on. And she's not as passionate, of course, as I am about the wrongs that are going on in this Judeo nation of ours and the world. But she's getting very good, and she'll say, we'll have the TV on a show at night. We record everything we watch, and then we watch it so we don't have commercials, basically. So we watch something, say 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. We'll have something on we might want to watch. Yeah, we're pretty picky because we don't want to watch junk, and we don't want to watch things that just yell at you and stuff. We don't watch that type of stuff. But she'll say, Robert, how about, I'll bet you. And I'll look at the person, and I've known this person for 40 years now, at least by sight on TV. I go, gosh, I don't know, but I'll bet you're right. I'll go over to the computer, bring up Wikipedia, Google search it, whatever. My gosh, she was right. I mean, you know, some of the things you just would never believe, some of the people you'd never believe. I'll give you, for instance, the most all-American couple I could ever think of, Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet. You know, they sing, you know, the great Christmas songs and stuff. I mean, they're so squeaky clean. They're lovely. I mean, for all I know, they're lovely, lovely people, and they're both Jewish. Yes, folks, they sing our Christmas carols, and they're on the specials during Christmas, and they're Jews. And that's how I feel about it, and I know a lot of the listeners here understand why I feel this way. For the people that are listening right now that don't understand my outrage on this issue, keep in mind, they're 2% of our population here in the United States. They fund, I believe, 90% of the Democratic National Party, and they fund 50% of the Republican National Party. You don't think that's an outrage? That kind of money, there are people that don't think like us. They don't have the same values. Anything goes. There is no moral standing with a Jew. Whatever he can do to get the upper leg. That's what he's going to do. They're outrageous, profane, laden, unethical, immoral people, and is everyone? No. But as a general rule, that's about what we're getting. And you don't see Jews hardly ever come out and say, I've had enough of this. That's wrong. About other Jews doing what they're doing. It's just like black people don't come out and they say, well, no, the black people don't riot and act the way the stereotypical black does. Well, why aren't you out saying shame on you and yelling from the top of your house on your chimney that I don't agree with what's going on here in the black community and I'm not one of those people? But you don't hear that. Bill Cosby tried it one time. Look what happened to him. For him to even say that the black people naming their kids stupidly, you know, they have all these stupid names. And how are you going to get ahead in the business world when nobody can even pronounce your name? Nobody even cares about it. It's just a stupid sounding name. Bill Cosby pointed that out. It says, we can't be naming our kids these stupid names. And yet he was, you know, he was heavily criticized for that. And that's just too bad. That's just the way it is. But I don't care what they do. Just stay out of my world. You know, there is no such thing as freedom unless you have freedom of association. And we don't have freedom of association. I have around me in my house, we had great neighbors for so many years. Now we have a Mexican next door and we have a black in the back. And they are hideous individuals that I don't want them around me. I don't want them within a 1,000 miles of me. I don't want them within the borders of the country I live in. That's the way I feel about it. And any decent moral, ethical individual should agree with that statement. We shouldn't be sitting there, oh, we got to love each other. No, we don't. I don't love hate. I hate hate. And those Hispanics and their La Raza and their drugs and their murder and their noise and everything, their the destruction of neighborhoods and school systems, and the blacks are the same way. And I hate that. I hate that hateful behavior that is thrown in our society now worldwide. We're not the only country that has that. It's an outrage. But I got off a little. I got off. Isn't this a music show, Robert? Yeah, we're in a music, rocking the music world. That's what we're doing here. Surprise, surprise, musicians you didn't know were Jews. Now, later on this year, getting towards Christmas time in December, I'm going to have two Christmas shows already. One's going to be about the beautiful, beautiful white Gentiles that have written gorgeous Christmas songs, sung them so beautifully and performed them so beautifully, and the Christian environment that they have given us here in this world. Whether you're a Christian or not, you should always appreciate the Christian culture that was brought in by our ancestry. It has allowed people to live in peace and have a beautiful place. Even if you're not a believer, you should appreciate that. And the next show, or maybe the show before that, I'm going to have where the Jews are in the Christmas music and productions and singing and songwriting, and they get all the airplay. So here we are, Christians, loving Jesus. I want to celebrate the Christmas season and his birthday. We celebrate it on Christmas, the December 25th, and we don't know when the birthday of Jesus really was. We think some of the research, it might have been in the spring. But whatever, it was a pagan holiday, and we were forced to worship pagans on December 25th back in the Middle East. And the Christians said, oh, we'll celebrate December 25th. And we celebrated the birth of Jesus. And that's how that started. So if you didn't know that, you know it now. But I'm going to talk about the musicians that will just surprise you, just like it surprised me. I mean, we all go through this stage where we're just overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed back in the early 90s by a friend of mine, and he would be pointing out things that I just wouldn't accept. And I, no, that can't be. And I'd look at it. He's right. And I'm thankful for his wisdom for the rest of my life now. I haven't seen him in years, but he's a super guy. And I miss him as a friend. He doesn't live around here anymore. So we're going to talk about these musicians. It's going to surprise you. Singers, you know, musicians, writers and stuff that make up the music world that we're in. We talked on one show about the record labels that are, you know, it's a Jewish business. Yet the greatest of all time were not Jews. It's the upper European, Germans, English, Russian. You need to be so proud of that. You know, what our people can do. Wernher von Braun taking us to the moon. The V-2 rockets going into outer space in the Second World War on their on their way to England. You know, they went into suborbital space. They were going thousands of miles per hour. You know, the atmosphere gets so thin that the jet rocket would go X amount of thousands. Is it either 4,000 miles an hour or 8,000 miles an hour? I mean, they were really traveling when they would come back in into the atmosphere and head over to England. But, you know, take all the war out of this for a second. This is what our German ancestry folks were giving us in the ME-262. Jets, jet fighters. You know, the F-86 and the MiG-15, the great fighter jets of the Korean War, let's say, those were taken right off the drawing board of the National Socialist German Army and their designers. The Luftwaffe already had that stuff in their designs, just like they basically designed the B-2 stealth bombers. The big winged bomber, was that the B-1 or the B-2? I can't remember now. The stealth bomber, the flying wing, that was German design. You know, so, Robert, would you get back to the music again here? Isn't that your job? Yeah, that's my job. I'm being paid millions of dollars, by the way. Anyway, I love doing the show, and I love just telling the truth. Because the truth, as God told us, the truth will set you free. And I will never be politically correct. I will never go along just to get along. I don't do things like that, folks. I have a limited amount of close friends for that reason. I have a closed group of people that are my good friends, and then I have everybody else are acquaintances. I have a lot of Christian acquaintances. I go over their house every week, and I'm going there tonight. I have acquaintances of mine. They would all consider me friends. I consider them friends in a sense, but they don't really know who I am. I don't talk about things. I touch on things once in a while when I think it's important to add something to our discussions, and sometimes it amazes them. But basically they're little babies in their first steps, and I'm way beyond those first and second steps. There's other people that can handle that stuff. And I'm not going to sit there and start telling them about National Socialist Germany of 1935, when all they've been told all their. Robert, would you get back on the music here? Yes, I will. Musicians, you didn't know who were Jews. I'm going to start off here right now.
Standing still.
born 1962. You remember her from American Idol, don't you? Oh, Miss Persnickety, you know, always told Simon Cowell to be nice, and she would, you know, she would never say anything bad about anybody. She was a worthless judge. Everything was always very good. Well, how would you know if something's good if everything's good? I mean, it just isn't that way. She was a terrible judge. But, you know, I'd known about her music back in the 80s. I remember her music in the videos on MTV and stuff. And they were catchy tunes and everything. But I just recently, the past year or two, found out she was Jewish. Abdul, you would have thought it would have been some Arab ancestry. Looking at her, I thought she was Hispanic, maybe. She was born 1962 in San Fernando, California, to Jewish parents. Paula's father was Harry Paula Abdul, born in Aleppo, Syria, raised in Brazil, and subsequently immigrated to the United States, as of course we take anybody, so yeah. Her mother was Lorraine Riscus from Manitoba in Canada, but her ancestry is from Russia and Ukraine. I always say the Ukraine, but it actually is Ukraine. And so Paula Abdul derives the Canadian citizenship through her. She has a sister, Wendy, who is 7 years her senior. And she graduated in 1980, Paula did, from Van Nuys High School, and was voted girl with the funniest laugh. Oh, isn't that cute? Paula Abdul, believe it or not, was discovered by the Jacksons. You know, the Jackson 5. They were watching the Los Angeles Lakers. And remember, all the Hollywood music people out in the West Coast, they all go to the Los Angeles Lakers to be seen. You know, we see all that. Every time you watch a Lakers game, which I don't watch anymore. I don't watch blacks in sports much. I mean, I watch my college football, but, you know, my team, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, has Taylor Martinez as a quarterback, and as I gave you that story last year, he's German-English. He's not. His Martinez is something his dad took from a stepfather of his and was raised with the name Martinez, but they're not Hispanic. It's German-English, if I read it right. It could be German-Scottish, whatever. I think it's German-English. And he's as white as me, and he's our quarterback, and man, he's good. You know, I just love white people. I follow that. You know, the Los Angeles Lakers act like they do, and they're rapists and thugs and druggies, and I'm sorry, I just don't agree with that stuff, and I don't want to be around them. I want them to do the best they possibly can for their families. Granted, they're not much family people. They usually have multiple sexual partners all the time, and you know, they abandon their families, and that's the way they do it. And but I wish they wouldn't. I wish they would build strong families, and maybe eventually they will, but they can't do it in our neighborhood. So anyway, Paula Abdul, back to them. The Jacksons found her. Why, she was a cheerleader with the Lakers. Then she eventually became the chief choreographer of the Laker cheerleaders, and they signed her to do a choreography for a video of their single Torture. She said her only problem was how to tell the Jacksons to dance. She said, imagine me telling them what routines I do. I was young. I was scared. You know, they were big stars, and she was, you know, just a Laker cheerleader, you know. Paula Abdul is a talented girl. She's kooky. After her stint on American Idol, when you'd see her in a limousine, they'd have a video going with her in the limousine. You actually see how she actually is. She's not a nice person. Someone you wouldn't want to be around. I'm going to go to a next person here who's going to be surprising to you. Remember Pat Benatar? hit me with your best shot. Remember that? We belong. Love is a battlefield. She was born Patricia May Andrzejewski. Jewski. J-E-W-S-K-I. Born in 1953. She's almost as old as me now. American singer. Four-time Grammy winner. And they're talking about her being probable Jewish ancestry. And by the way, today, for one of my sources today, I was just going to Jewwatch. Jewwatch.org, I believe, is what the website is. And I just was pulling things off their site left and right. A lot of times I go to Wikipedia and the other encyclopedias on the internet and do Google searches for things. I kind of stuck to what the Jew Watch was having on their websites. Now sometimes Jew Watch, everything they put on there isn't absolutely factual, because I've gone into some things and I could not prove to myself like that person was Jew or that person is a Jew. Pat Benatar acts like a Jew. She wanted to be a sex counselor. That's going to be a Jew normally. Anyway, four-time Grammy winner, probable, is how we should say that, Jewish ancestry. Pat Benatar had considerable commercial success in the United States during the 1980s. You know, she was on MTV all the time with her videos. And she was a cute girl and everything. She isn't as cute later in life. I don't know what is about her. She didn't age real well, as far as I'm concerned, anyway. Yeah, everybody can't be me, I suppose. During the she had certified gold albums, 3 certified gold, 5 certified platinum. Platinum's a million sales. Gold is 500,000 sales, and 500,000 isn't really a lot in the pop world. But her 5 certified platinum albums, she had 19 top 40 singles, and was one of the most heavily played artists in the early days of MTV. And she was born in Greenport, Brooklyn, and a lot of Jewish people in Brooklyn, of course, in New York City. Benatar's dad was Andrew, and he was a sheet metal worker. And Benatar actually had an Irish mother, Mildred, and she was a beautician. With those 4 Grammy Awards for Best Female Rock Performance from 1980 to 1983, she had other songs, Shadows of the Night, Love is a Battlefield, I mentioned that one. She was in 10 Grammy Awards ceremonies in the 1980s when she was nominated for 8 different times for Best Female Rock Performance. For Invisible in 84, Sex as a Weapon in 86, All Fired Up 88, and Let's Stay Together in 89. She got, here's some of the things she's involved in. Artists United Against Apartheid. Blah, 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 blah. It surprised me she was Jewish. I mean, if you look at her, you never know it. That's the thing about Jews. I mean, you really don't know it. It's something. We talked about Irving Berlin before. A lot of people don't realize Irving Berlin was Jew.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on the Ritz. Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cutaway coat, perfect fits, putting on the Ritz. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper, trying hard to look like Gary Cooper. Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their mitts, putting on the Ritz.
He wrote hundreds of songs. Actually, he wrote a song every day, he said. Many of the songs were legendary. He's a very talented man and one of my all-time favorite songwriters. Yes, he's a Jew. I wish he wasn't ever in this country. But I wish he was on the island of Madagascar writing the greatest music there ever was. Of course, he's not with us anymore. He had a 60-year career. And they said he wrote an estimated 1,500 songs. But if he did what he said he did, writing a song every day, then he'd have a heck of a lot more than that. What he probably meant, he writes every day. And I write every day myself. Hardly a day goes by when I'm not writing something. If you're a songwriter, you just write. If you're one of these people with a few songs that you decide to write one day and then you had to go shopping instead because that was more important to you, you're not a songwriter. There aren't that many songwriters in the world. There's millions and millions of people that call themselves songwriters, but there's not a lot of songwriters. Anyway, he did 19 scores, Broadway scores, and he did 18 Hollywood film scores. His songs were nominated 8 times for Academy Awards. Many songs became popular themes and holiday anthems. Easter Parade. In your Easter bonnet. Remember that? That's an Irving Berlin song. Easter is about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I don't know why a Jew would be writing anything on it except they control the business. Why not write a song and make millions of dollars on it? That's what they do. They make money, folks. He wrote White Christmas. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. You know, Bing Crosby made the classic recording of that. Yes, that was written by a Jew. And it's one of the most played popular songs in all of the history of the world. He wrote Happy Holidays. He wrote that. This is the Army, Mr. Jones. There's no business like show business. He wrote that. This is the Army. You're in the Army now. You're not behind the plow. He wrote that. And remember Kate Smith singing God Bless America. That was Irving Berlin, folks. 1938. And she was still performing that on the performing it in the 60s in the Kate Smith Show. And they sang it again with Celine Dion, who's a Canadian, in that typical God Bless America by a Canadian. Celine Dion after the 9/11 attacks. Isn't that nice? He was born Israel Isidore Beline, one of 8 children of Moses and Lena Lipkin Beline. And they were in Belarus in Russia. His dad was a cantor in the synagogues there, and they uprooted their family to America, as did many Jewish families in the late 19th century. In 1893, they settled in New York City. Surprise, surprise. Irving Berlin, if you can admit this, believe this now, folks, admitted to no memories of his first 5 years in Russia, because he left very quickly, except for one. He remembers lying on a blanket by the side of the road watching his house burn to the ground. By daylight, the house was in ashes. He says, according to this biographer of his, Nicholas II was the new Tsar of Russia, and he had revived with utmost brutality the anti-Jewish pogroms, which created the spontaneous mass exodus to America. Well, if it was so bad, wouldn't they have just killed him? I don't understand this. Just like in the Holocaust, all these survivors of the Holocaust and all these branding of people with their numbers for their being in the prisons, the concentration camps. Why would you do that if you just put a bullet through their head and you don't have to do any branding? The Germans are known as being very efficient. Why would they sit there and brand somebody when you have a brand putting in the fire, the hot iron to brand somebody, or you can just take a bullet and shoot them. Now, and I hope nobody ever does any of that stuff. But why would you be branding them if you're just going to kill them anyway? Because they didn't. They died of diseases, which was unfortunate because towards the end of the war, there was no medicines, there was no food. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible thing. But anyway, so they're blaming Nicholas II for their immigration into the United States. They should probably think it's great then. Also, around that same time, the Gershwins came, George and Ira Gershwin, Jewish, Al Jolson, Jewish, Sophie Tucker, the L. Wolf Gilbert, Waiting for the Robert E. Lee, that was written by a Jew, Jack Yellen, Happy Days Are Here Again, Louis B. Mayer of MGM, and the Warner Brothers, they all came over. You know, we have a lot to have a grudge against Tsar Nicholas. That was not very nice of him. And this is kind of interesting about Irving Berlin's White Christmas. The songwriting can be a complicated process. Its final result should sound simplistic, according to Garrison Hintz. Well, I'm not sure if it's a complicated process or not. The more complicated it is, I don't believe beautiful music comes from that. I think song crafters come from that, and a professionally written song, which you'd never want to listen to anyway. But White Christmas has only 8 sentences in the entire song. Lyrically, Mr. Berlin, Irving Berlin, achieved all that was necessary to eventually sell over 100 million copies and capture the hearts of the American public at the same time. And then according to Saul Bornstein, Irving Berlin's publishing company manager, it was a ritual for Berlin to write complete song, words, and music every day. Now, he couldn't have if he only had 1,500 songs. I've got that many songs, and I'm not going to admit to writing a song every single day. I wrote every single day. I don't like to force anything, and I don't think a good songwriter ever wants to force things. It was a ritual, and Irving Berlin was quoted as saying he does not believe in inspiration. And I understand what he's saying that if you're waiting for inspiration, then you know you might not be inspired. A lot of times I'm not inspired to write anything. I just don't write anything if I just have nothing to say or anything or want to write about. It's not that I couldn't write, just might not. He believed that Irving Berlin may be gifted in certain areas, but his most successful compositions were the result of work. Well, good work ethic in anything is, but Blood, Sweat, and Tears doesn't give you a good song. You can work all you want at something. That's not going to give you a good song. To have a great feel of something that you want to write down is going to give you that song. Berlin said he does most of his work under pressure. When I have to write a song, I go home at night, and after dinner, about 8 p.m., I begin to work. Sometimes I keep at it till 4 or 5 in the morning. I do most of my writing at night. Although I have lived in the same apartment 4 years, there has never been a complaint from any of my neighbors. Huh, maybe they were scared of your mafia connections or something, then maybe, I don't know. Each day during the daytime, he would attend rehearsals, and so then he would write at night, and then he'd bring it to the rehearsal the next day. I kind of like that. He was not always certain about his own writing abilities, and he asked a songwriter friend of his, Herbert, whether he should study composition, and this is important here. He said, Mr. Herbert told Mr. Berlin, you have a natural gift for words and music. Learning theory might help you a little, but it could cramp your style. So Irving Berlin took his advice and never learned to read and write music. I can't read and write music. I write music all the time, but I can't read a note of music. And I really don't want to. I'm in the side of writers that don't believe that you need to study composition, because then you start becoming technology-based and mechanical and stuff. And to me, songwriting is magical, and I want to keep it that way. And a lot of songwriters are that way, and they want to keep it that way. Irving Berlin did. He said is well known that Irving Berlin wasn't able to write down his own music. And, of course, at that time there weren't, punch the button and you could have a recording, and so you remember your song, which is what all modern songwriters have to have. We have little recorders around us all the time and a piece of paper and a pencil. And I'm never far from a piece of paper. And nowadays, if I have an idea out during the day, I'm not home, I call my cell phone voicemail, and I leave a message on my music. I leave music or an idea for a song or lyrics, I leave it on my voicemail so I can get it when I get back. Because otherwise, you forget it. And you've done it once or twice, it makes you so angry, you learn not to do that. He was unable to write his own music, so he paid a professional musician to harmonize and write his music. But he always had close supervision of the guy to make sure he did it right, because he would say, no, I want it this way, and make sure you write it that way. And Irving Berlin may seldom have played acceptable harmony, nonetheless, by his mastery with his inner ear, he sensed it. And, well, I can't write my harmonies either, but I can sing them. I can put down a harmony. I do harmonies in my songs all the time. It's second nature for me. And that's what he senses it. And, in fact, many of his melodies with his natural intuitive harmonic sense at work in his head, but not in his hands. He couldn't even play in other keys. He played in one single key. And when he wanted to change keys, he had a mechanical device on his acoustic piano where he would lift up and put it in another key. But he always played out of the same key. He wrote out of the same key all the time. I understand that. It's just like a capo on a guitar that guitar players like to use. It just makes it easier on things. And, of course, some guitar players can't bar chord and stuff, so they have to use a capo. It's kind of a crutch, but nevertheless, that's fine. I use a capo on occasion. It's just fun playing in different keys. And it's very easy playing the guitar with a capo. It takes the tension out of the strings a lot of times. Other writers felt that maybe Berlin's work wasn't in their same category because he couldn't read and write music. Well, I'm sorry. Few other Richard Rodgers or Cole Porter, two Jews there, that were complaining about his songs were just simplistic. No, they weren't. They were beyond anything that they did. But he says that was due primarily to forgetfulness and confusion, making them minimize his talent. He died in September 22nd, 1889, in New York City at the age of 101. So I guess it's good being a songwriter. He wrote, of course, White Christmas, Alexander's Ragtime Band, Easter Parade, Happy Holiday, There's No Business Like Show Business, God Bless America, Putting on the Ritz, I mean, you name it. That's a lot of stuff, and I'm telling you, I'm just touching on the stuff. Here's another one that's going to surprise you. Mr. Neil Diamond.
It seems so far away. We're traveling light today. In the eye of a storm. In the eye of a storm.
Wow. Neil Diamond, white guy, huh? Wow. Born in Brooklyn, New York, 1941, to a Jewish family descended from Russian and Polish immigrants. Neil Diamond's father, Akiba Neil Diamond, was a dry goods merchant. When you hear the name diamond and gold and silver, it's not always the case, but remember, many times it is. These are precious metals and emeralds and rocks and jewelry and stuff. No wonder jewelry is J-E-W. That's what the Jews have always been in historically, and they control the world through the precious metals. If we get on a gold standard again, the Jews have that gold, and they're experts at it. And as of the turn of this century, Neil Diamond had sold over 115 million records, including 48 million just in the United States, and of course that's still climbing. He is considered to be the third most successful adult contemporary artist ever on the Billboard charts, behind Barbra Streisand and Elton John. Now, I'm surprised Barbra Streisand is ahead of him. She's had some great stuff with some great songs, of course. But I'm surprised that she's ahead there. Neil Diamond's songs, he's a songwriter too, have been covered internationally by many performers. And he was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1984, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2011. Blah, blah, blah. But some of the songs he has, Cracklin' Rosie, Song Sung Blue, Desiree, You Don't Bring Me Flowers, Love on the Rocks, America, remember that? They're Coming to America, pretty good song, but I don't appreciate it now. Yesterday's Songs in Heartlight. He said he actually wanted to be a laboratory biologist and wanted to study. And he wanted to find a cure for cancer. But his grandmother died of cancer, and that really, that's what he wanted to do. He said he was always good at the sciences. And he thought, I would go and try and discover the cure. But in his senior year at New York University, a music publishing company made an offer. I guess they heard of his music. Again, it's a closed society. The Jews have, you know, hey, call up Uncle Sassafras and see if he'll listen to your songs. You might have some songs here you might like. Or Uncle Sassafras owns EMI or whatever. We can't do that, folks. Our people don't own anything. We're shut out. You know, we're not going to have another Beethoven ever again, because Beethoven is walking around right now. There's as a percent of the population, if there was one Beethoven in 1800, he died in 1827, I believe. If there's the one Beethoven in Germany at that time, with the population as it is in the world, there's probably 10 or 20 equivalent Beethovens right now on Earth. And you'll never hear the music of these people. They're probably mid-level business managers, or they're canning pineapples in a factory somewhere, or they're driving a truck. Whatever they're doing, they're shut out of the music business, folks. Only the Jews are pretty much allowed in there. Yeah, there's exceptions to there, but when you think the Jews are only 2%, and they're probably 90% of the management of the music business. No, I'm sorry, I have a problem there. Anyway, he wanted to. They made him an offer as a senior at New York University. They would give him $50 a week if he would write songs for their publishing company. And back in the early '60s, $50 a lot of money. But that started him on what they say is his road to stardom. A few other, let me give you some new ideas here. Of course, you know Bob Dylan, Bob Zimmerman out of Minnesota, he's Jewish. Simon and Garfunkel, both of those gentlemen are Jewish. George and Ira Gershwin, you know, Rhapsody in Blue. Marvin Hamlisch, The Way We Were, Memories. Oh, the colors of the dead. A beautiful song, of course. He didn't write the lyrics, but he wrote the, some other Jews wrote the lyrics. The lyrics were written by the ASCAP president. I'm pulling blank on her name and her husband. Al Jolson. Remember Al Jolson, the blackface? Mammy.
Some folks like to get away. Take a holiday from the neighborhood. Hop a flight to Miami Beach or to Hollywood. But I'm taking a Greyhound on the Hudson River line. I'm in a New York state of mind.
Billy Joel. Not Billy Joel, was some Italian guy from New York City, huh? He's Jewish.
cars and their limousines.
Pianist, singer, songwriter, and composer. Started off with Piano Man. I saw him in concert in 1973-74 doing Piano Man. He was actually leading off somebody at the time. I think he was leading off for, was it Hart or somebody like that. It's one of the, I don't go to a lot of concerts. Even when I was young, I got so bored in concerts. I don't go to too many concerts. I mean, I'm there in 15 seconds, and I'm at a concert, and I can't wait to get out. I can't wait to get out. I'm so offended, basically. But I'm so bored, I can't take it. And I've walked out on so many things, even a lot of Christian artists, I won't name who they are. I've gone in and, you know, and the place is packed and people are enjoying themselves. And I remember my daughter and I went to a concert, bought tickets and everything. And in 1 minute, we're looking at each other going, we want out of here. And we finally slipped out at intermission, you know, everybody else is buying CDs and everything. But folks, I get so bored on things. But anyway, I saw the Jew, Billy Joel, back in those days when he was an up-and-coming artist. Now he has become the sixth best-selling recording artist, the third best-selling solo artist in the United States, according to the RIAA. He has the third best-selling album in the United States with his greatest hits, Volumes 1 and 2. Well, take that. He's had top 40 hits in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and he's had 33 top 40 hits in the United States, all of which Billy Joel wrote himself. He's a six-time Grammy Award winner. I've never even been nominated. He has sold over 150 million records worldwide. I sell a few CDs on occasion. People get a hold of me, and I sell them CDs. I used to have a website. I don't keep it up anymore. I just, you know, it's a tough thing to take care of, and you have to package it and sell it at a fair price. You only sell, I'd almost just soon give out CDs for free, and I give out a lot of free CDs. Then people want to email me and they want a CD, you know, and that's fine. And I love it. It's a pleasure for me to do it because, you know, people tell me they play a certain song of mine over and over and over again. That's how I know that. That's the true compliment. By the way, if we're using, people that don't know it, that listen to the show, the opening music, that's one of my songs. And that the ending of the song is on the ending of this hour. That's the outro of my song. It's called Talk Radio. I wrote it back in the 90s for a friend of mine who had his own radio show. He's Jewish. He turned Mormon. But he heard about my music and liked my music, and he got hold of the guy who was my manager at that time and wanted me to write him a song because Rush Limbaugh was going so big at the time, and he had his music, you know, from that group in San Francisco, so he wanted that style. So if you hear the opening Stratocaster I'm playing there, you know, that's based on Rush Limbaugh's opening music with Chrissy, whatever her name is, her group out there in San Francisco does that. So I wrote that, and I like my song better, in fact. But that's where that song comes from. I just didn't want to let it go to waste, so I use it on my show now. Anyway, some more of these individuals. Billy Joel, very successful, and both of his parents, both sides. Rosalind Nyman, and his dad was Carl Amson Joel, and who, after the advent of the Nazi regime, there was no Nazi regime, as you hear on the White Network on the history shows, and you hear Hattie Scott, who's very knowledgeable on this, is all, even he talks fluent German and has been in Germany, and he knows these things, and he will be the one that tells you it's National Socialism. You don't, you know, Nazis was a slang term, undoubtedly, from the Jews. And I'm not a Nazi, but I appreciate the National Socialist Party and what they believe in. If you don't understand that, why I would say such an outrageous statement, do some research. What did the National Socialists believe in? I will bet you a dime to a dollar, and I'll lose the dollar if I'm wrong, but their value system is what your value system is. It's not this some murderous rampage that you're hearing in the Jewish-controlled media. Anyway, let me get off that a second. Let me go to another one. How about David Lee Roth, the lead singer for Van Halen? Remember that? Yeah, of course, he acts like a Jew, too. He's an outrageous individual, doesn't know how to control himself. He's a little boy. He was born in 1955. He's getting up there, too. He's just a few years behind me. He's now, after he left in 85 for his own solo career, he's come back, and they in 2006, Van Halen had their biggest nationwide tour yet. So they're doing real good. Eddie Van Halen's a very talented man. They have good songwriting in their group. And anyway, David Lee Roth's grandparents were all Jews. They came in from the Azores in Portugal, Russia, and to Newcastle, Indiana. He's of Jewish heritage, and he was raised in the Jewish religion. Another one is Carly Simon. Oh, she's just so talented. Oh, she's so pretty. She's a Jew. Simon and Schuster. You got that? That's who her dad is. They're one of the biggest publishing houses in the world. Is it any doubt that she made it in the art world? That she got heard? You know, she started getting big in the 70s and had some good stuff. 13 top 40 hits. And You're So Vain, remember that? Nobody Does It Better. Coming Around Again, the former wife of another notable singer-songwriter, James Taylor, who's still playing quite a bit. And they had two children, Sally and Ben, and they are also musicians. She was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1994. Her father was Jewish descent, of course. Richard L. Simon, he was the co-founder, so it's a father, not grandfather, of Simon and Schuster, who was also a pianist who played Chopin and Beethoven at home. Her mother was Andrea Louise Simone, née Heinemann, a civil rights activist and singer of Black and German descent. Oh, God. Oh, jeez. Oh, forgive me, Lord. In a 2004 interview with fashion designer Michael Kors for the July issue of Interview magazine, Carly revealed her full ancestry as, listen to this, folks, you're going to love it, Jewish, African, Cuban, and French. Yeah, right. How about Alan Freed getting off the musicians, and how about the people that played the music? You know, he was born 1921 and died in January 65. Was known as Moondog as a disc jockey. He became internationally known for promoting a mix of blues, country, and rhythm and blues music on the radio, and under the name of Rock and Roll. His career was destroyed by the Payola scandal, which, of course, he would be in on. That hit the broadcasting industry in the early 1960s. Another Jew would be Carole King. I feel the earth move under my feet. Remember that? Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits. Sultans of Swing. Du-du-du. He's a good guitar player. And he loved Chet Atkins. And on Chet Atkins' special he did that was aired on the public television. He was there. He played Imagine with Chet Atkins. It was very nice. Of course, as I said, Steve Lawrence and Easy Edie Gourmet of the all-American people. No, they can't be Jewish. Yes, they are. How about Barry Manilow? You have a probably a gay. He played in gay bars with Bette Midler, who's also Jewish. That's how they got started in the business. Bette Midler would sing in Jewish lounges, and this little queer Jew was her musical arranger. And how about the Beastie Boys in rap? They're all New York Jews. Oh, surprise, surprise. How about the rock group Kiss? The two main characters in Kiss was Gene Simmons on bass, Paul Stanley on guitar, lead singing. Two little Jew boys. And Gene Simmons is the stereotypical Jew. I mean, he just absolutely has the personality as a Jew. He's someone that we would definitely move out of our country once we take it back again and say no more of this. He's going to Madagascar. Of course, Bette Midler, Randy Newman, short people make da 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 da. Short people are da da. Remember he did that. He did does a lot of film scores. His dad was big. He was a conductor of some sort, so he got right in there on his dad's coattails. Terrible singer, whines when he sings. Okay, songwriter. But I mean, he has all the incentive to write. He's born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Oh, this is gonna shock you folks. Hold on to your seats now. Robert Goulet. Tell dream the impossible dream. Remember how he sang like that with no edge whatsoever? He just sang in a box. The most horrible singer and Mr. Perfect. And he's a Jew. His actual name is Robert Applebaum. Kenny G. I can't remember his last name now, but he uses just the letter G. Makes it a lot easier, folks. Jew can't sing. he plays the saxophone, and I like some of his music. I'm not saying that. But, you know, it's just the way it is. Well, folks, that's our show for the day. I wanted to shock you a little bit on this show, and I probably did. I'm sure that a lot of you out there didn't know. You know, some of them were Jewish. You didn't know many of these were Jews. I mean, Robert Goulet. it's unbelievable at times, you know. But I love a lot of the Jews. You know, I don't want them harmed or anything. I just want them shipped to Madagascar and let them populate that huge island off the coast of Africa where they'd be happy and they'd be able to leave us alone and we'd be happy and we could have our culture. We'd probably be trading with them, you know, and be best of friends. But I'm sorry, we can't have what they're doing in our country. We can't have that. And I don't want it. I want a better life for my kids and my family and my friends and that's just how I feel about it. And I know a lot of you out there feel the same way. Anyway, write a comment down below on this website and say hello. Anything you want to add to this? I know you've got a lot of shockers probably to tell me too. So again, this is Rockin' the Music World with Robert Lloyd, and I'll see y'all next week. Love you so much. Goodbye now. Every morning, look in the morning with you. Every morning.